after the Torah spent quite a few parshios speaking about the construction of the Mishkan and the dedication of the Mishkan and the Kohanim, and then the Torah now turns to speak about Tumah and Tahara, okay, spiritual defilement. The reason being, the Mefarshim say, that once God's presence comes amongst the Jewish people, you want to preserve it and make sure that it's not pushed away. And part of the way of ensuring that is to make sure that things remain spiritually pure and there's no spiritual defilement that would push away the God's presence, push away the Shekhinah. However, there are two kinds of spiritual defilement. There's what is called Tumah Li, to become defiled to, and Tumah Bi, to become defiled with. The first kind, which the Torah deals with first, is the Tumah with, meaning Tumah that comes from doing something internally, eating what's it called non-kosher food. To a certain degree is called Tumah, it's called spiritual defilement. Later on we find that murder is a spiritual defilement, and immorality, sexual immorality, is a spiritual defilement, and idolatry is a spiritual defilement. Those are things that people do, actions they do, and become within themselves spiritually defiled. And then the Torah speaks about different kinds of spiritual defilement, where you become defiled to something by touching it, by coming in contact with it. That's an external kind of defilement. Coming in contact with a dead body, being in the same the same domain as a dead body, touching certain kinds of dead animals, or defilement that comes from the various issues that issue from the body, or having tzaras, certain kind of malady that's usually called leprosy, but it's not leprosy, on your skin. All these things are referred to as to become tamei too, because they are external things. You become tamei by touching them, by being in their domain. The other things, you become tamei by eating them, by whatever. And it's interesting, there is a tremendous difference between the two. The kind of tumah that you become tamei by touching, right, the external kind of tumah, really only affects the Kohanim. A Kohen is not allowed to defile himself to the dead. But a regular Jew, there's no prohibition, for the most part, of defiling oneself to the dead, and surely not other kinds of defilement. And it only applies to a regular Jew that if he, in fact, becomes tameh, he's not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, not allowed to bring or eat sacrifices. That's the only effect. However, the effect is very, very serious. That if you are Tamei, and you do come into the Beis HaMikdash, and you do eat sacrifices, under certain circumstances, you can be Chayiv Kares. Right? Your soul can be cut off. So it's very serious consequences. The second kind of Tumah, which, what's it called, applies to all Jews. You can't eat non-kosher foods. You can't serve idolatry or be immoral or murder. That kind of tumah applies across the board. But the consequences to many of them are not that serious. If you eat a non-kosher animal, right, so you get malchus, you get lashes. But you don't get koresh, you don't get cut off, right? You do if you become tamei in other ways and go into the Beis HaMikdash or whatever. And this tumah applies across the board to everybody. What's the difference between them? I was thinking to explain it in the following way. There are two causes that enhance one's relationship with God, or that deter and prevent one's relationship with God. One is internal and one is external. Let's start with the internal one, because the Torah starts with talking about eating non-kosher food before it talks about the second kind of tumah that you contract externally. The first thing is, a person has to correct and make sure that his body and soul are in a state that they are fit to have a relationship with God. And therefore, a person should not eat things that that stop up his heart and separate him from spiritual things, that give him bad character traits, right? Eating animals that animals of prey that represent various bad traits, bad character traits, can transfer to human beings, both by eating them and coming in contact with them intellectually, and knowing that these animals have these bad traits, or even the food itself can transfer these bad traits to a person. And the same thing goes with serving idolatry, which affects a person's soul, and being immoral, which affects a person's body, and killing someone, which affects a person's nefesh, his emotional side, because usually murder is the result of bad emotions. So the first thing that a person has to make sure is that he intrinsically is in a state where he's fit to have that connection with God. Okay. That's the first state, and that's the most important thing, and that applies across the board to all Jews, not only to Kohanim or whatever. And since this is something that affects more or less the body and its relationship to the soul, so the punishment comes in the body. You get malchus, you get lashes. Okay. Once you are intrinsically fit to have a relationship with God, then comes the second step. The second stage is now externally to not do something that will impede that relationship between you and God. Right? In other words, first you have to be the kind of person who's fit. And then there's a relationship without that you have to work on. Just this morning, speaking to somebody about a situation of a couple that have shalom bias problems, right? They can't get along, but the husband has very serious psychological problems. We came to the conclusion that before you can work on the relationship between the husband and wife, the husband first has to work on himself to be the kind of person that could have a healthy relationship with somebody else. First, he has to be okay on himself, because if he's not, right, if he's sick emotionally in himself, he's never going to be able to have a good relationship with somebody else. The problem isn't his relationship with his wife, his problem is himself. So first he has to work on himself. Then once he is on a level that he can function, then he can worry about functioning vis-a-vis somebody else, having a relationship with somebody else. Same thing over here. First, you have to be intrinsically fit to have a relationship with God. Then you can work on that relationship between you and God, to cement it. That's the second kind of tumah. That tumah is external. That's in between you and God, and if there is some kind of aura around you, right, that is pure, so you can attach yourself to God. And if the aura is impure, that separates between you and God. That relationship, not the intrinsic one, but the ongoing external relationship, that more or less applies to the Kohanim. The Kohanim have to be constantly in touch with God, because they're God's messengers and agents to us, and our agents to Him. So they're being tameh, being impure, and having that separation between them and God would be very detrimental. But for a regular Jew, it's not a problem. He doesn't have to be constantly in contact with the Rabbanu Shalom. He has to be fit to have that contact. And from time to time, he goes into the Beis Hamikdash or whatever. And therefore, since that kind of tumah cuts himself off from his relationship with God externally, the punishment is kares. You get cut off, right? It's you're being cut off from your relationship with God. But the other one is you're being cut off with your relationship to yourself. It's something that the tumah causes a pagam, something wrong with you within yourself. Therefore, the remedy for that is malchus. You get lashes, right? It corrects your body. Okay. All of these tumas have a connection to death. All the external tumas have a connection to death. Obviously, coming in contact with a dead body is death. But if you think about it, all the other tumas are dead bodies of animals or creeping creatures that you come in contact with when they're dead, or issues that come from the body that have a connection to death, because they are issues of zera, right, which can create a human being, and when it comes out and doesn't do that, it's like a little bit of a death. Or menstruation, which is the breakdown of a woman's ability to have children for that month. All of this has a connection to a certain degree with death. Or a metzora also is like a dead person. His skin turns, what's it called, white, like the skin of a dead person. And he has to act like he's dead. He has to mourn for himself, and he stays away from other people, or whatever. All these things have a connection with death. Death is the ultimate separation, seemingly separation from God. Because God is the source of all life. God is called the living God. And therefore something dead doesn't have a connection. That's why Rosh Hashanah, wicked people are called dead, because they don't have that connection to the source of life. And that all of that emanated from the sin of the golden calf. The sin of the golden calf was looking for a intermediary and going after other powers that really are dead powers, because if they have no connection to God, their power comes from God. And they have no life to themselves. They're lifeless powers themselves. Their power flows from God. If you treat them as powers to themselves and look to them as intermediaries, you're basically serving a dead God. And that's why idolatry is called dead. Right? They're dead powers. They have no power to themselves. They don't see, they don't speak, they don't walk. Their only powers come directly from God. So you are basically making something that is a separation between you and God. And that's why this week's Sedra is also Parah Aduma, Parshas Parah. The cure for those defilements is, for at least the most serious, which is the defilement of being defiled to the dead, is the Parah Aduma. Why? Because it's an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. It says when a child goes and throws up and dirties up some place, you call the mother to clean it up. So here you call the red calf, which is like the golden mother, and she cleans up the mess. Meaning that the egel has no power to itself. It emanates from the mother who gave it life, and that mother, God, gave life. So you trace things back to their real source, and you break the separation between the powers that you want to look to and God himself. Okay. And therefore a person who's separated from God, because he comes in contact with these things that represent death and tumah, right, he can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, he can't eat korbanos, because those things represent a connection to God, and you're disconnected. You can't pretend that you're connected when you're not. First you have to correct and make the connection again. And the way that you make that connection again is to bring the mother of the egel and show that it gets its life force from something else, not from itself, and therefore it ultimately gets its forces from God. And people served idolatry because they felt that God was too great to have anything to do with lowly people. And the truth is that even though that seems to be very humble, why would God want to have anything to do with me? It's really very haughty. Because a person's basically saying, if I would be God, I wouldn't have anything to do with these puny people. So I can't imagine why God would have anything to do with puny. So it comes from, on the one hand, misplaced humility, which has its source in really being a haughty person. So together with the paraduma, with the red heifer, you bring a piece of wood from a high cedar tree, which represents haughtiness, and you bring an azov, which is a weed, which represents humility, because those are misplaced, and you burn them together with the paraduma, and you also throw in a tolash, shani, a piece of wool that's dyed red, which represents sin, and put all that together, and then negate it by burning it, the ashes, then you mix with spring water, living water, pure water, which represents your connection to God. Torah is compared to water, right? So you immerse yourself completely in that water, and you take the water mixed with the ashes of the things that you negated and sprinkle it on you, and then you become tahar. That is the significance of that tahara. And therefore, that's the whole concept of tahara, is immersing yourself totally in a pure waters, like the Rambam says, the waters of intellect, of Torah, where you're totally surrounded and there's nothing anymore separating between you and God. And that's why the goal of the Mishkan and the Mikdash was to make that connection to God. The goal wasn't to have a place where God's presence is. The goal was to make use of that presence and connect yourself to it. So therefore it says that even though the Mishkan itself was erected on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and the Paraduma, the first Paraduma, wasn't made until after that, so why do we read the Parshios of Paraduma before Parshas HaChodesh? It's the wrong chronological order. First should come Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Parshas HaChodesh, and then Paraduma. But the Yerushalmi says, because it's Taharosan Shal Yisrael, since it is the purity of the Jewish people, it comes first. Meaning that in action, first you have to have a Mishkan before you can create something to make use of that Mishkan. But the truth is, the goal of the Mishkan in theory comes before the Mishkan itself. Sof Maaseh B'Machshava Tchila. That's where the Torah always functions. It first presents the goal and then tells you the means to reach that goal, even though the means come before the goal. But in theory, the goal has to be presented before the means, so you know what the means are there for. They're for this goal. So we first read about the tahara, the purity that the paraduma creates, and then we hear about the building of the Mishkan, because the purpose of the Mishkan was to create that purity that a person should have a relationship to God. But that purity couldn't come until after the Mishkan was erected. So in practice, the Mishkan came first, and then the paraduma. But in reading, in idea, the goal is presented before the means to reach that goal. And we know that the Jewish people can exist without a Mikdash. We've existed for 2,000 years without a Beis HaMikdash, right? Even though we're considered like dead people compared to what the real life of the Jewish people was when there was a Beis HaMikdash, but the Jewish people can't exist without Torah. For the last 2,000 years, we didn't have a Beis HaMikdash, but if we didn't have the Torah, we would be out of existence completely. So therefore, it's that inner purity which is the more significant and the first step. That external purity which connects you to God, not which makes you fit to be connected to God, right? I'll give another example. You have a phone. So if the internal workings of the phone are not proper, you're never going to be able to make a connection. But you can have a phone that's perfectly okay, but you don't have a line. You don't have an external connection. The phone can exist without an external line. You just won't be able to connect anything, but the phone's still functional. But if the phone's broken, right, the internal mechanism is broken, then it's not a phone anymore. Same thing. The Torah creates the internal mechanism of the Jewish people. If it's broken, there's no people. It's not a phone. The Mikdash and the other external purities and impurities, which are dependent on the Mikdash, right, they create the connection. But if the Jewish people are still intact, there's still a phone. They just can't make the connection. So it's to a certain degree, very, very sad. But the Jewish people still exist. So Torah creates the functioning phone. And the Mikdash creates the external line and connection. Okay. And that's why we find that Chazal say, Halavai osi ozovu v'torasi shamaru. Halavai, you forget about me. Forget about your connection with me. Just keep the Torah. Because if you break your connection with me, all you've broken is that external connection. But if you keep the Torah, you're at least still fit. You're still a phone. Right? Eventually you'll be able to have that connection again. But if you don't keep the Torah, right, you're breaking the phone, then there's no hope at all. The same thing it says, Mesir Ausno Mishmor Torah. A person who doesn't want to listen to Torah, right, even his davening connects you externally to God. Torah makes you fit to be connected. If you don't want to listen to the Torah, then there's no purpose to the tefillah, then who you're davening to. If you don't have a functioning phone, what's the purpose of the line? You're never going to make a connection externally if the phone is broken. And that's why the Rabbanu Shlom said, when I took you out of Egypt, my first thought was not to give you sacrifices to connect you to me. My first thought was to give you a Torah to make you the kind of people that will be fit to connect to me. And therefore, as preparation to Pesach and Korban Pesach, and having that relationship to God, first we need to go through all the mitzvahs that are internal, right, before you can have that external connection. And if we work on ourselves and understand that first and foremost, we have to make ourselves internally, right, by keeping the Torah properly, the kind of people that are fit to have that connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then, if we are that kind of people, then the time will come that God will give us back service, that's a call, and we'll have, you know, connectivity. But if we're not fit, then there's no purpose to resume that service, because not going to work anyway, have a broken phone. So first, fix your phone. And then, if God wants to, He'll reconnect to us, because we have a functioning phone that can be reconnected to. And then the Mashiach will come, and the third Beis HaMikdash will be built, and we'll be able to have the second kind of purity once we have the first kind of purity. That, I think, is the bottom line after all of that. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
The external insult was found working. So the external.
There's two kinds of tumah. The Torah speaks about tumah that is generated by eating non-kosher animals or whatever, right, and doing certain kinds of sins like immorality and avodah zarah or whatever. That's referred to as tumah. It's a different kind of tumah. And then there's the kind of tumah where you get, where you touch something or whatever, and you become tameh. You touch a dead animal, you touch, what's it called, you come into contact with the dead, you have an issue from your body or whatever. All those are external kinds of things. So one is called tumah belot letameh bohem. Don't become tame with them. That's an internal kind of tumah. And that tumah applies to all Jews, and it's what's it called, not as serious in punishment as a second kind of tumah, which only applies mostly to Kohanim. Most Jews can become tame if they don't have to not be, always be pure. But if they're tame, they can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. And then if you do, you get kares, which is much more serious. So there's a very big difference, and those are called tame li, to become tameh too. That's the external kind of tumah. The external kind of tumah affects your relationship with God externally, right? The connectivity. The internal tumah affects your ability to have that connection to God, right? Because you're damaging your soul, damaging your body in such a way that it's not fit anymore to have a connection. Once you're fit, then it's an external thing to make the connection. That is impaired by the external tumas. That's not as serious as what's impaired from within by the internal kind of tumas. That's basically the idea.